Well, good evening, everyone. I thought we would start the program this evening without the hullabaloo, without the carrying on, without the stuff that is usually attendant upon the beginning of the program. Because, frankly, it just doesn't seem appropriate on a day like this. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Wednesday. Ordinarily, there would be all the usual hullabaloo of prayer meeting Wednesday. I'm Bob. But given Senator Kennedy's death today, like I said, it seemed improper to start with a bunch of shenanigans. So we're not gone. There are not many occasions where I find myself speechless. And there is so much to be said about Senator Kennedy that trying to say it becomes nigh impossible. I can only say that I am, on the one hand, sad at his passing, and on the other, that I revel in his life, celebrate who he was, and am glad that to the extent that he was having pain, that he has been relieved of it. You know me well enough to know that I will not talk about any pearly gates or streets paved with gold or any of that nonsense from a barely literate people 3,000 years ago. But something in me wants to think that on the order of the energies of the universe, that some particle of what was him has been reunited with some particle of what was Jack and what was Bobby and what were his sisters, his other brother. So pardon the pauses that you can drive a truck through. What occurs to me is that this program should, as it always is, but even more so this evening, should be a time for you. Your reminiscences, your thoughts, your feelings, just a bit of an honorable retrospective. Because there is the Kennedy mythos. But that mythos only took root because there was something in that family that called out to the best of all of us and spoke to a dream of a better America and a better world. When I saw the news this morning that Senator Kennedy had passed on, died, left, transitioned, I don't like any of those phrases. But when I saw the news today, it occurred to me that, yes, a life as we know it had ended, and a generation had come to a close in that family. but there is something that is gone in our national character as well. And this is with no disrespect for the ongoing next generations of that family. But theirs was a generation of that family represented a hope for America taking its next step in the ongoing experiment of what we loosely call freedom. And I don't know where in the American overall family, I don't know where the likes of them are in the here and now. I simply don't. I know, if you can't tell, I was this close to just, I don't know, running some funerary music or something and knocking it off for the evening just as a matter of my own personal homage to Senator Kennedy and his family. I was too busy being a baby, literally, to be cognizant of the presidency of John Kennedy. I was a child not yet in school when Bobby was killed. And the Kennedy with whom I was most familiar was Ted, because he was an ever-present fixture within the governmental structure and the Senate from my earliest awareness forward. And whenever I would hear him speak growing up, he was saying the things that it seemed only logical someone dedicated to principles of equality and real freedom and real decency in this country would say. And they were things that were not said by many others. And more's the pity. There has always been a virulent resistance to change in this country, even before this country was a country. And more than any other family, the Kennedys embodied the argument that we step forward boldly and not fear change. And so that is what I sense is gone. Those of the next generation older than me will have much more profound reactions, I suspect. Our children got home from school today, and we told them the news. And they wanted to see the photograph. On a brisk and windy late October day in Fayette County, West Virginia, in 2004, Ted Kennedy and Robert Byrd appeared about 8 miles from here to exhort the assembled to vote for John Kerry for president in 2004. It was really quite an intimate little moment. and I had the opportunity. For some reason or another, I had black and white film loaded in my camera. But I got a photograph of Margie and Ferg with Senator Kennedy standing with them. I have sent that JPG file to have it posted today. There are probably, literally, millions of images of Senator Kennedy. But that is the one that means the most to me. Because it was a brief moment when my children got an opportunity to stand with a man who has stood, who spent a lifetime standing for children just like them, not only all over this country, but all over this world. I heard audio, and perhaps we'll play it in a little bit, of a speech that Senator Kennedy made during that during the ongoing debacle that remains the mess in Mesopotamia. And he said, "My God, for what we have spent in 2 months there, we could have hired hundreds of thousands of teachers." One gets the sense that the Kennedy family did, in fact, love knowledge for knowledge's sake. And that is a rarity and to be treasured. So I am told that that photograph will be going up on the headonradionetwork.com website in a few minutes. Have a look if you wish. And also, if you wish, the program is utterly and completely yours this evening. There are things that we can go into. There are places I don't want to go. When I read the news this morning, because I'm so used to what I do on a daily basis, I felt a visceral sickness because I knew what would be going on the other side. It wasn't prophecy. I had but to look. And I don't know if I've got the stomach to share it with you or not. So we shall see. But more than anything else, I'd like to have your voices. Your voices for as long as you wish to let them be heard. To remember in your own way and share with others what Senator Kennedy meant to you. We all knew he was sick. He knew he was sick. We knew that the end was not far away. And yet still the news today comes like a punch in the gut. As I said, because on the one hand, it fills one with the sense that something is irretrievably gone, lost from the national spirit and psyche. But also because looking forward, I do not see anyone who could even remotely begin to fill his shoes. And that makes me sad for this nation. Oh, so sad. So, let's waste no time. And let's do, well, I'm going to the phones, but I want to share I want to share some of the thoughts that I have received. The earliest word came from our friend Maura this morning. And she said, "I am writing to you after hearing about Ted's death because I am hurting so badly. I need to talk to someone, and I know that you will understand. I am taking his death personally. I believe I am feeling this so distinctly because he cared not simply for the masses, but for all the individuals within collective groups. He cared about me, and he cared about you and your family. He cared about each of the Horn's listeners. Sadly, our country has lost a big part of its moral compass, and I fear that void will not be filled for a very long time. In November of 1963, I was in Catholic grade school in New York City. The nuns rushed us all into church to pray for a special intention and then sent us home to find out that the president had been killed. Even though I was quite young at the time, it still hurt. I glued myself to the TV to participate in the funeral from afar. When Life magazine came out with a special edition dedicated to Jack Kennedy, I rushed out to get a copy and I treasured it for years. By June of 1968, I was in high school. Bobby was my senator, my inspiration, and my presidential choice. When he was killed, it hurt deeply. My whole world was insane. Martin Luther King had been killed only a few months before Bobby's assassination. Vietnam kept shipping home the poor, destroyed remains of our soldiers, and the Vietnamese people were dying needlessly. I wanted it to stop. My guiding light went out the day Bobby died. Now it is August 2009, and I am a grown woman. Teddy has died. It was he that renewed my faith and gave leadership to my causes, and it seems that he was always there to guide me. It was he that lit the light for me after Bobby's death, and now once again it has been extinguished by my tears. I question whether my light will ever shine again. Thank you for listening, Bob. Reverbo, I'm taking it personally. More. Like I said, there are reminiscences of which I am not capable. But they are more than accessible to many of you. Many of you like Maura. That idea of a compass, that idea of a voice, even though it be a lone voice crying in the wilderness, the voice must yet cry. That those who have ears to hear may yet hear. This may be a long 2¾ hours, but I implore you, share your thoughts. Do not keep them to yourselves. There are many as hurting as you feel. And the only remedy, if remedy there be, is in the sharing. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it doesn't really get much more personal than this, huh?
No, it doesn't, Reverbo.
I mean, I grew up with this family. I grew up with these men. And these women. I mean, look at Eunice Shriver. She just passed away a couple of weeks ago, and, I mean, she dedicated her life, a lot of her life and her, a lot of her checkbook to the Special Olympics. I mean, these people just understand what it's all about.
Yeah. And I suppose it would be, it's a fair question to ask why someone who has so very much would care about those who have so very few, very little. But there have been examples of those sorts of people through history, and sadly they are an exception and not the rule. I'm struggling, Reverbo, not to lash out at the other side, but rather to let this grief stand on its own. But it's it's very difficult, isn't it?
I might lash out. you may not, but I might. Let's just say that the contrast is so very clear between the people, between the men like Ted Kennedy and some other men that we've been victimized by. I mean, some people, you really can make it what you want. I mean, you can make public service just as a way to line your pockets and your sponsors' pockets. You can, I mean, I'm sure, I don't want to stay on this part of the conversation too long, but I was just thinking today, there's plenty of people toasting his demise right now, you know?
Yeah, they are. And that's the thing that made even looking around the internet so positively, nauseatingly sickening.
And the vile crap that the Wiener and the Beck and all these people were saying about this guy. People that don't, that count so little they couldn't even, I mean, a scum couldn't even, they're not even worthy of dumping the Kennedy's trash. And they talk about them like that. But, you know, the greedy ones, the self-righteous, and the sanctimonious ones, they're all, it's a big day for them. One more good guy down the tubes. It's disgusting. But he was, they knew, people like this are like, well, let's see, today I read people honoring him and calling him the champion of liberty. I wrote some of this down, of fairness, of civil rights, the champion of opportunity for the little guy. Yeah. Who's going to replace him?
Where, Reverbo, I mean, just...
people, it's so easy to talk about this. But this guy, he put in the time, man. I mean, he must have just been so... You wonder what he was thinking, really, the last 8, 10 years. You know, watching people go from the people being too big to fail to, you know, Goldman Sachs being too big to fail. Just let the people fail. I mean, it just must have just...
But even seeing America in its darkest hours, such as he did during the 8 tormented years of the Bush administration, he did not give up, Reverbo.
No, he didn't.
He never quit, and he never stopped trying to call America back to what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, we need more of that. Well, I guess he had to give that presidency a shot, and I guess after that sort of crashed and burned, he was just able to really become one of the best senators we'll ever have, and he certainly did. But these, you know, we've talked about this many times, about that whole idea of noblesse oblige. You know, if you just accidentally, through no work of your own, are born into privilege, then, I mean, there's a social imperative to help the rest of us poor slobs who have to get up and go to work. And that whole family understood this, and we can clearly see the families who don't.
Is it a this was a family that was devoutly Roman Catholic. Is it a function of faith? Is this a case where faith really shows its better face?
Well, there you go. That may be. That's the faith that we've been missing. Yeah, that's the faith that's been trashed. By the hypocrites and the self-righteous. Maybe so. Plus, you can't forget how horribly the Irish Catholics were persecuted. Not only, including when they came over here.
Well, precisely, Reverbo. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to imagine a Boston that isn't Irish and Catholic. But that certainly did exist. I think the Kennedys came to America in something like 1848 and faced bitter discrimination. You know, the signs in the windows. No Irish need apply.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And for a family with a strong sense of family, those stories are passed down from generation to generation. And it is remembered. And so even though they acquired great wealth, the past, the shared memory of origins. And God knows what life was like in Ireland. They would not have come here, but life in Ireland must have been nigh intolerable.
It wasn't probably a paradise over there. But think, you're getting to this great moment about people, because there's a point, not in my life maybe, at least not as profoundly, maybe there is a point in all our lives, but there was a point in this family's life where they could have gone either way. They could have said, we're going to hold a grudge. Now we'll get back at them. But instead, they said, now we can forget all that. Now we can.
And the bigotry was held against them even as far as the 1960 election.
Oh yeah.
You know, if a Catholic gets to be president, you know he's gonna he'll have to get permission from the Pope.
Yeah, just like
how much difference is there between that and what happened 48 years later with, well, do you reckon he's going to put his hand on a Bible or a Koran?
Well, it may have even derailed Mitt Romney's candidacy, for that matter. I mean, religious intolerance is, that's not a new story. But you're right. Well, you got to remember, John Kennedy barely won that election, really.
Yes.
Barely won that one.
Got pushed over the top by a bunch of hillbillies.
Pretty much, and could be even a few shenanigans, but there's nothing. And that leads me to, I guess, another point about these people. How do I put this? Well, the rich can get in as much trouble as the poor. It's just the only difference is they can afford to. I mean, these people, some people are just bigger than life, and they're going to work. The word hard isn't the word I want to use. They work hard, they play hard, they succeed hard, and when they fall hard. But I think the word I'm looking for is the word extreme. There's some people who just live in the extreme. And I think that's like the Kennedys, you know. There's a lot of wealth, for that matter, a lot of wealthy people, a lot of celebrities and politicians, even sport, you know, people in sports, all of this. You can afford to be self-indulgent. You can afford to lose your self-control. You can have a real dicey personal and private life. But I think with the Kennedys, I think what was drilled into them was that they knew they would screw up from time to time. But they never forgot that the rest of us could not afford to screw up. I don't want to lay too much praise on the man, but it seemed like he never forgot that.
And despite whatever missteps were made, came back to his center, came back to his core, came back to his base, time and time and time again. Would not let himself be chased from the public arena, would not let himself be chased from the public debate. And God knows the right-wing hate machine has reveled in it.
Oh, yeah.
Because they hated no one more than they hated him. And they hated him not just because of who he was personally, but because he was Bobby's brother, and because he was Jack's baby brother, and all the hatred that the right wing manifested. And you know, it's odd, we talked about this on the program last night. All the hatred that was manifested by the right wing ongoing for John Kennedy was carried over into Bobby and was transferred from Bobby to Ted. Who will the right wing have? Who is their preferred hated Kennedy now, one wonders?
Oh, Obama will serve as that. Don't. He'll serve as anything they need. It doesn't get more, what's the word I'm looking for? You can't miss Barack Obama. I agree. It's amazing how, and he did. There were so many moments where Ted Kennedy could have just crashed and burned. And there's nothing like being a Kennedy. I mean, you were talking about people like Mozart, you know what I mean?
Yes.
He had that going for him. I mean, we can't take that away from him. He was intimidating, even though he was, you know, also at times somewhat of a buffoon. You knew this was coming last year. I know you want to get to some other people, and can I read you something, a short thing really quick about
Yes, Ken? Yes.
Because I cut this out of actually the Philadelphia Weekly last June, or June of 2008, when they knew he had the brain tumor, and they knew it was just a matter of time. It's written by this guy who evidently grew up in a Catholic family, and his father, he talks about, before the part I want to read, that his father was a salesman for a while, and traveling salesman around Pennsylvania, and he talks about, would come home with all these anti-Catholic and anti-Kennedy attitudes that he experienced, you know, especially in the rural parts of the state. I mean, it just went on and on and on. You're right. I mean, they just hated these people. They hated the people that would help you the most. I love that. But anyway, so his father really started to get jaded by all this. And so I'm going to start reading here, and he says, after Robert Kennedy was killed, he says, when the gunshots grew silent, what was left of the Irish Catholic political idealism was Ted, self-destructive, self-indulgent, hedonistic, a shadow of his older brothers, a hollow remainder of the passion that had burned so bright. In time, the youngest Kennedy became the whipping boy of the right. Just what you were saying. A cartoon, a buffoon. They'd raise their glasses of bourbon to and sneeringly toast. A target they could use whenever they needed to rally their side and peel open their wallet. So then he goes on to talk about one night his father just had enough of this kind of, these insults, this kind of abuse. And somebody was over at their house, and someone told a Kennedy joke, told an off-color Teddy joke, and the guy goes on to write, the exact words I've lost, but I remember the reddening veins in my father's neck, and how he reminded the jokester that he had just ridiculed a man who had lived through two brothers getting their heads blown off. Had he considered for even a second what that might do to somebody? I mean, it's just, you can't even, just thinking about the Kennedys, you can't make this stuff up. He goes on, and I'll end this so you can get to other people. The guy keeps writing, funny what time does. Kennedy the buffoon stayed on the job year after year, decade after decade, riding it out. Through the go-go years and the me-first decade, through boom and bust, he was often the sole voice speaking up for the helpless. You look up at the TV, there he'd be, puffy and oversized, glasses unfashionably large, blasting away at the greedy and the powerful, scolding them for forgetting the aged, the uninsured, the undocumented, and the unemployed. Through all the bumps and bruises, it turned out the brother who survived all about the work. Whatever the odds, the cause was endure, the hope would live, the dream would not die. Anyway, you can see why I cut this one out. I really, really thought that the guy just nailed it.
Yeah, he did.
And this was over a year ago. You know. So, I guess I'll leave you with that. I wanted to weigh in tonight because, it's the last of them is gone. What are we going to do? Who's going to be there?
And, you know, I will not praise one man at the expense of another, but had he still been around, the obvious torch, the passing of the torch, would have gone from Senator Kennedy to Senator Wellstone. But Senator Wellstone is gone, too.
Senator Wellstone is gone. Senator Wellstone went in a fiery conflagration, I think.
And I can't help but ask, who's the next guy? And frankly, you know, there is no political clone, so to speak. But where is that family with that sense of noblesse oblige?
Yeah, they can step up anytime.
They aren't in Kenny Bunkport.
No, they're not.
And never will be.
They don't appear to be south of the Mason-Dixon line.
No, they aren't.
I mean,
there are some good liberals in the Senate. I mean, I can name off a couple. You know, Russ Feingold's good. If he is there long enough, I think Sheldon Whitehouse will be good.
Sheldon Whitehouse is good, from our man from Rhode Island.
Yeah. You can't take anything away from Tom Harkin. Given enough time, because senators have to mature. I think when you first walk into that room, well, good afternoon, Senator. It's probably more potent than the purest anything, Senator.
There's a new family. Politicians, Colorado, the Udalls.
Maybe. The Udalls, yeah.
Maybe we'll see something out of Mark Udall.
We wait and we see, I suppose. The Udalls are...
We'll see anything out of Senator Ensign, though, will we? I think we've seen all we need to see out of him.
You know, and that's another thing. Obviously, the Bush family continues its rabid desire to perpetuate what it considers to be its dynasty. But I don't care how many presidencies they hold, they can't touch that family. They just can't.
No, they can't.
And I don't, you know, there are great, the next generation does have some greatness. Last March, I heard Congressman Patrick Kennedy of Rhode Island speak. He and Frank Pallone came to speak to, the closing reception for our lobby week attempts up there. And he spoke so passionately, and he spoke with that same Kennedy eloquence. The torch, the intent is there, Reverbo. You know, I want Bobby Kennedy Jr. to be in government.
Oh, in the biggest way. Oh, yeah. Well, the man in the White House now speaks that way. And I met and heard so many people last summer and last fall who could maybe one day pick up the ball with Kennedy that's left. These people were, they were
but,
passionate.
But to,
they
to
were
pick it
selfish,
to,
you know.
To pick it up is one thing, Reverbo. To carry it for a generation is another.
Yeah, it's true.
But thank you for your thoughts. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, I'll be listening.
All right. And I obviously the message has gotten through. Keep it personal.
Keep it personal. All right, Bob.
Bye now.
Later.
That's Reverbo, and we roll along. Hi, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hey, Bob. This is the Fox Hill Atheist.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm a little, a lot upset today.
Hard not to be.
Yeah. I'm new to politics in the past 3 years, but I know all the good things Ted Kennedy has done. What's got me upset is I was listening to Tom Hartman this morning, and two of his callers, one from Texas, one from Oregon, called in saying that their post offices were not flying their flags at half-mast today. So I drove up to my post office, and neither were they. I went in, and I told them they needed to do that. And he said they haven't received their orders from whoever that they can do that. So I spent the better part of the day calling. I've reported to the news. I've called my governor, the one senator that I know will listen, and Norm Dix, my congressman, and everybody but except for Norm Dix was doing the right thing. Norm Dix's office refused to get involved unless I sent in a printed, handwritten letter through the mail.
Which would get there in 6 weeks.
Yeah. The whole point is, I'm a veteran. I served 10 years. And our senators are doing public service, too. And we lower the flag in honor to those who serve. So that's had me upset today.
And I think justifiably so. One wonders who dropped the ball. I mean, will the flag be lowered tomorrow? Will it be lowered as of the day of his memorial?
I haven't gotten any answers, but I've reported it to two of my local newspaper and one of the TV news stations, so I'm keeping my eye on that. The governor's office is doing the right thing. I called them, and they called me back, and all the state buildings are doing the right thing. It's federal buildings, and that upsets me that our country's fallen so far that they won't even the proper respects. Just makes me think what they'll do when I die. So,
you leave me speechless. Yeah. It may very well be a largely speechless day.
Yeah. I was going to call him for something totally different today, but I'll save that for another time. I wanted to let everybody know that that's what our federal government's doing today. They're dishonoring our public servants.
I will make a point of checking out the post office near where we live first thing in the morning.
Yeah. I did, before I went around making phone calls, I went to did my research. I went to the VA website to make sure I had everything correct. And by according to Veterans Affairs, the flag for a U.S. senator should be at half-mast the day of and the day after their death.
That seems rather a definitive answer, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very precise. I in the military, I studied that for the colors, you know. I'd just forgotten the specifics about it, but that's what is owed to a senator, and he's definitely a senator who deserves that more.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Well, I thank you for calling in, and I thank you for your time, and don't let up.
Well, I never do. I'll let you go so you can let the other people speak.
All right. Well, you take care, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you,
Bob.
Bye.
Bye. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Juanita.
You hear that?
I do. Sounds like a busy day outside Juanita's house.
Yeah, we have that a lot. First of all, I'd just like a little aside. Thank you for saying what you did about Patrick Kennedy. I first heard him in the uh, uh, impeachment of
President Clinton.
Clinton, yeah. And I was really impressed by him. And I think, and I've seen him other things. I've seen him at union meetings and all. And I think the problem with him, and anybody that believes in prayer could pray for this young man, or whatever they believe, you know, to send good thoughts to him, or however you believe, you know, because he's got his mother in him, you know, his mother's been declared incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got that problem, you know, he had that with the, when he went driving and all. And while under the influence of the sleeping pill. But he's got great passion, too. He really does. And I became a fan of his then. I've heard a lot of people talking against him.
Well, he came to talk to us that March evening in D.C. In regard to H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act. And he spoke of the rights of Appalachian people to have full access to what it means to be American.
Yeah.
And he did it beautifully, and he did it eloquently, and I've got a photograph of my children with my daughters.
With him too, huh?
With him as well.
I'm not being able to get those anything on there. Of course, I've been having trouble with my computer. But I would like to say something about the Kennedy family, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead. That's pretty much what this evening's about.
If I can digress concerning President Kennedy. The first time I had seen pictures of him, I didn't really know anything about him. But the first time I really heard him speak, he hooked me in right then. He was on, running for president, and he was on, he came on the Jack Parr show. Have you heard of that?
Oh, gosh, yes.
I used to watch it. I probably saw everyone that was on. And he didn't joke around. He was very serious when he, you know, was campaigning every time I saw him or heard him. And what he said that he wanted to do for people, I just thought, oh, this is my guy, you know. And, of course, I said something the next day to one of my neighbors, and, oh, no, we can't have him. He's Catholic. And I said, gee whiz, you know. And I didn't really know how bad that was going to turn out to be. But then when he was campaigning, my daddy's birthday was November the 25th, and he had won the nomination, President Kennedy had, to be our president. And John was born on November the 25th, and my daddy was just ecstatic. He sent him a telegram. And they sent him back, really nice thank you. And he was just thrilled. My daddy was so thrilled to have that. That was just a treasure to him. He had me put it in a frame and all. And that they had the same birthday, he and John. But anyway, then... my mother and daddy were still living when President Kennedy got killed. And we were, I was not able to really to work out. My son was small. But let me go back just a little bit.
Sure.
About when my son was born. He was born August the 4th of 1963. Like you said, like your year was. And the Kennedy, Jacqueline was pregnant again, as was Ted's wife, because she lost hers. And, of course, you know, Robert's wife, she had no problem having her children. She was a real baby maker. But anyway, my son was, I had to leave my son in the hospital because we didn't know if he was going to make it or not. And then their baby was born on the 10th. My son was still in the hospital. It was on TV, and their baby died. And there was a man at the place where I was staying. There was a man said, "Oh, I'm glad that happened." And I said, "How can you say that? My son, you know, it's just, you just, I mean, you just heard it all over the place." And my, I didn't know if my son was going to make it or not. And their son had died. And so I've got all these things. But anyway, after when he was assassinated, I was at home and my mother was at work and my daddy, he had him a nursery, flowers, you know. And I was watching As the World Turns. I used to watch the soaps back then. And, it came on, you know, and announced about Kennedy. And I went out and I ran out and I said, "Daddy, they shot him. And I knew it was because he was wanting civil rights for the black people. And, you know, now they change history and they say, "Oh, he didn't really want to come out and say that he was for black people." Well, that's just not true. I think it's the main reason he was killed. And then I heard other things, you know, like now they're coming out with a book saying that actually Jacqueline Kennedy and Robert Kennedy were in love, you know.
Oh, please.
A big news. Well, listen, I heard that back when he was president. I went to my aunt's house one day and she was in the Baptist church, you know, and all, and I think I was out of it then. And she was in the Baptist church and there were a bunch of them together and they were said, "Oh, you know, Jacqueline, you know, and is in love with Bobby. Bobby, they're having back then now." And this guy's wrote a book, or whoever's wrote a book now. Like, this is big news. And then when Kennedy was killed, my daddy, like I said, had a nursery, and there was a high school teacher came out, and he said that, of course, you know, it happened around about 1:30 our time, I believe, and the school was still in, and he announced to his class that Kennedy had been killed, and most of the classes stood up and applauded and cheered. Hooray. And when Kennedy was running for president, our main people down here, our senators and so forth, Senator Hall, they didn't want to be in the same room with the man. And so he had a lot to contend with. He didn't win by a big margin. And there's always saying something about Chicago. Well, there were other things, because if there hadn't been, Nixon would have fought it. And that has come out in actuality, that he would have fought it. But he had a lot going for him, too, that wasn't on the up and up. So anyway, he did win by a big margin, so that gave him even reason to fight him. He was fought and fought and fought. But the one thing I remember about him that he did get passed, and I God only knows how, was back then when you worked in a dime store, you worked 6 days a week and you get paid $20 or maybe $25 for working maybe 60 hours a week. And he got that change in the minimum wage. He got a minimum wage and he got the hours changed and all. And even for agriculture. But theirs was a little different. It was, sometimes it was 40, sometimes it was 44. And the reason I know all of that is because my mother worked an agricultural job. But he did get all of that changed. And he did stand up for the black people. unlike what they're saying now, you know, trying to change history.
Right.
But these people, I think, I'll just say this, and I think I've said what I wanted to say, but I'll just say this. You know, there's a lot of, you hear about the Rockefellers, what all money they gave to these foundations, you know, foundations.
Sure.
But the Kennedys, they went to the trenches. Bobby Kennedy went out to the rural areas.
Yeah, they did the work. They did the work for themselves.
They did it. They went out in the trenches. And if you notice that, now they got big houses, but they got a big family. But it's not ostentatious. They don't, you know, they don't live big. I mean, they live higher than we do, but they don't. It's not gaudy, or you know, it's they've got boats. I guess you'd call them yachts, but they're not huge. Have you noticed they don't live a big deal lifestyle?
I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but you're right.
Yeah, and Bobby Kennedy went out. You know where people were. He went out into way out where people, they, even little children, you know, had worms coming out of their noses. It was just so horrible. And they and the people, it's just like everything. The anybody that wants to help the little people, they're hated. And you know.
Well, yeah, and that exists along a continuum, Juanita, without a doubt.
Yeah, right.
The persistent reference to FDR as a traitor to his class.
Oh, yeah. And now they're trying to rewrite that history. And they're succeeding somewhat. You know, that's what is so frustrating. But I'll tell you, we've been blessed with a lot of wonderful people, and when Kennedy died, it was just so horrible. All this hope. And I know that Johnson brought a lot of it to pass, and I'm thankful for that. But I just couldn't get into him. Kennedy was a wonderful speaker, as were all his brothers that I know about. And you know, another thing of the Eunice that just passed away.
Right.
She got the Special Olympics started.
Right.
And she was out in the, you know, these people, they just get right in the trenches. And there's, you know, there's a lot of them that are carrying on the name, and just hope that we get more people like them. More rich people that can. It is sad, and I just hope somebody rises up for us. But I don't know.
But the question is who that person is, Juanita.
Yeah. Who knows? But I just think about in Texas, they're taking out any reference to Frederick Douglass, Chavez.
George Washington.
Really? George Washington? George Washington Carver, for sure.
No, George Washington. You know, chopped down the cherry tree, threw the dollar, yeah, crossed the Delaware. Yeah, that George Washington.
But anyway, God help us all. We can, our country,
lest we be unable to help ourselves.
Right. Our country can go, it can go way off the deep end. I think we're at a precipice. It could turn out to be wonderful for, you know, but we've got so many people in this country that don't want to know the truth, and those that don't mind lying, and there are many, and they're doing a lot of destruction. And, you know, you talk about hell and all. I've heard you talk about it a little bit.
A little bit, here and there.
don't you kind of hope there is for some of these people? I mean, people like Glenn Beck and all, they don't, you know, it's bad enough that they don't agree, but they don't mind stirring up the worst in mankind. But I just hope, and I wonder why Kennedy was spared. I mean, Ted Kennedy was spared his life. You know, bless his heart, I was beginning to wonder if he was going to have to go and talk at Eunice's funeral, but he wasn't able to. And, you know, he went through all of that. They went through a lot of things. You know, he had a plane crash where his back was all messed up, just like his brothers had been.
Mm-hmm.
His brothers had been messed up, and President Kennedy had been messed up in World War II. And, you know, I say this, these are not my gods. These are heroes with human flaws. And we're all of us in this world. We're all human. We're all flawed. But some of us are, and I hope I am to a small extent, some of us are heroes, even though flawed.
Well, we are, and it is the nobility lies, Juanita, in the ongoing struggle to overcome the flaws.
Yeah, and you know, I just hope, I'd like to be an activist more so than I am. I mean, but I'll tell you, Bob, I could cry for our country.
I know.
And I want to say that Guy James had a wonderful tribute to Kennedy today.
I knew he would. We talked
you
briefly
know,
before
bless
his program.
God James. You know, God James is a great person.
Oh, I know that for a fact.
He's a hero. And, you know, I think he might be your guardian angel.
Yeah.
You and him, you know, y'all go on them trips and all, and he knows his way around.
Very true.
And don't you love, I just love that he's adamant in what he believes. He believes in the right thing. And you too.
Well, I've never worked with anyone quite like Guy.
Yeah,
he is the real deal, and
it's just wonderful how it worked out that y'all got together.
It is, and it's another one of those things that happened because of the unceasing hard work of Ben Birch. No Ben Birch.
Yeah, you
know,
yeah.
No Horn. No Guy James. You know.
I can't remember how I heard about Guy James. I mean, I heard him when he was on the radio.
Right. Well, you know, when he was on terrestrial radio, he used to advertise periodically. Once in a while, he would advertise on Bart Cop, and that's where I saw him. And then I
maybe somewhere like that, but some reason I got into his program when he was still on the radio. I heard him on one radio station, and then he went to the other radio station, and then they, you know, let him go because, you know, they couldn't offend their listeners, you know. Even though he was paying for the show, they weren't paying him. He was paying to be on there. But I'm not leaving with very nice thought, but you know, if everything goes right, maybe it's the wrong thing to do. Maybe the things that are hard are actually the right things to do.
Indeed.
And we just can't give up.
No, and that, I guess, is the message of Senator Kennedy's life.
Yeah.
We can't give up. We mustn't.
Yeah.
We mustn't give up.
And I noticed, you know, he had a humility about him, too. I saw him at Martin Luther King's, it was Coretta King's funeral. Remember, the bushes were there and everything. When he got up, that people were applauding him big time, and he just kind of, like, threw it off, you know, like, I'm not here for that, you know. He didn't say that. It was just the way he went about himself. So, yeah, we've lost a great leader, a great worker for mankind, a great friend of mankind.
Indeed, we have.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, and that's why I think it's fitting that we spend the evening remembering him.
Pardon?
I said, I think that's why it's fitting that we spend the evening remembering him.
Yeah. And let's hope his legacy doesn't die.
Indeed. Juanita, have a good evening. We'll talk
you
soon.
Night-night.
Bye now. And we will go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
Well,
tough day.
A little depressed. Yeah, you know how it is. I was going to tell you on a few little things here I've noticed watching, skimming over the web while I was listening. I do notice here that I was over at Newshounds, and they said that Fox Nation turned off their comments.
Because it was so vitriolic and filled with hate?
Well, essentially they didn't say that, but you got the feeling that was the reason.
Yeah.
And somewhere, I think it was maybe over at Huffington Post, they were saying that, I won't say what they were saying, but apparently there are some people that were making comments like on Miss Sarah Palin's Facebook account about Ted Kennedy that we won't talk about, because my blood pressure don't need to go up that much. But I'm just curious tomorrow to go back to Newshounds and Media Matters and see how the Fox Noise machine decided to rewrite history. Because, you know what I mean, I'm sure that tonight they'll just unload on him eventually. I mean, I'm sure it'll be, oh, we're sorry he's gone. But apparently one of the lines they're now saying is, of course, if he'd have been there, the health care thing would have gone a lot better. If Jesus Christ had been there, they'd still be fighting it.
I saw that, Luke, and that made me a little sick in the first place because it was said by some wingnut.
Uh-huh. And I'm sitting there going, look, they wouldn't have cared. You know what I mean? It's like I said, they don't give a care. You know, whatever somebody comes up, they're going to be against it. You know what I mean? They've been rewriting history. They're going to rewrite history again. I mean, we had this whole thing now, what was the new one? The death book. Of course, no one bothers to bring up when they're talking to these people that, oh, by the way, this is from the Bush administration. So now we found out who the real deathers are. The Bushies are. You know, this one that apparently was given out to the Veterans Administration, copyright 2007.
Right.
But, it's like I say, I'm sure that, like I say, as the night goes on and we go down the list of the media horrors over at Fox News, that it'll just get worse and worse. But by the end of the evening, I don't even want to think what it's going to be like. It's like I said, I can't watch it. I'll wait till tomorrow morning, turn on Media Matters and Newshounds and see what they tell me. Because they have better people than I that can stomach that for short periods of time.
No kidding.
It's one of those things, the more you look at it, you just want to keep screaming at the TV occasionally. But, it's like I say, you know, we were talking about here in the office today about it. That here's a family that's gone through four of their sons. One was killed before he ever even had a chance to do a national service, which, you know, the family thought he was going to be the Joe Jr. They thought he was going to be, you know, the sort of the alpha. You know what I mean? And then you had John, who was cut short. Then you had Bobby, who's cut short. And Teddy, who goes there and works for 47 years. And you like to think that if the other two hadn't been killed the way they were, they would have been there for 47 years. Maybe not, you know, maybe not the same place, but they would have been there doing something. You know, that if John Kennedy had lived through his first term and into his second term, he'd have been at the UN or something. You know what I mean? That's, like I say, it's a family that had to go with the silver spoon in their mouth and decide to take it out and pick up a shovel and help people, you know, had less than they did. So it's just, you know, just incredible to sit back and watch it, you know, and like I say, a lot of people just forget what all he's been involved with over 47 years up there on the hill and the tragedies he's gone through in his family, not just the two brothers, but, you know, I mean, other members of the family who've had problems and all that. Like you said, about Patrick and about Robert Jr. and all the rest of the next generation of Kennedy, they're out there working. They're not as high profile as their fathers and mothers, but they're out there working. I mean, they're all out there doing something, trying to help. So, you know, we'll just wait and see, like I say, see what's going to happen, that hopefully enough people will look at some of this stuff that's going on the right side of the dial and go, that disgusts me. Let's switch to something else.
You would like to think that, Luke. I don't put a lot of faith in it, however. Because the right wing has so much a larger voice than common decency has in this country.
But it's just one of those things that I'm sure that we'll have a couple of them, namely the pig man and the one that Mr. Olbermann now calls Dusty Rhodes, that I'm sure they'll overstep. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that with Beck. He's the one that, when that line's drawn in the sand, there's that little voice in his head saying, jump over it! So, I tell you what, I had some other things, but since you're doing this tonight, and that's fine, we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow, Friday. But like I say, just everybody keep your eyes open, your ears open, and pay attention when you hear people that you know are heading down the wrong path. Because they're gonna tell you, they're telling you the truth, and we know what that means. But I have no idea. I'm making it up, but I got my earpiece in here with Rush Limbaugh, mayor, telling me what to say.
Well, and Rush Limbaugh was not today was a stay classy Rush kind of thing. And I've got here before me on a tab on the screen, Luke, some stuff that I don't know if I've got the guts to go into. And that says a lot, me being me. But
it's one of those things. It's like I still, I'm still waiting for the day that, we can get into things about Rush that totally go off the other side. We won't do it. But someday there's going to be somebody. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be Stewart, if it's going to be Barr or somebody is going to absolutely just ask him. How is your Dominican Republic health plan working?
It would be nice to see that happen.
Next time he goes on vacation, I hope somebody sends photography. You would just love them to catch him doing something, even just slightly questionable, just to watch him run away from him when they find out, or when they have proof of it, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, let me let you get on, because I know we need to talk about the Kennedy family, and Ted Kennedy especially.
He deserves the evening, I think.
All right, then. You have a good evening. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Friday.
All right. Take care, Luke.
I'll see you.
Bye now. From East Tennessee, our good friend Luke. And we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
If I start crying, will you forgive me?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a feeling it would hit you hard.
I've been crying most of the night. I felt this way twice before in my life. And I don't think I can stand it.
If there is anything to be taken from this, Susan, it is that this, at least, was not another one of those horrible moments when it was a function of murder. The hate and the vitriol is the same.
Oh, yeah.
But
the notice went up on the web last night, close to 11:30 last night. 10 minutes later, because I had to stop myself crying somehow, so I figured, well, Susan, get mad. I went over to Freeburville. Oh, you would not believe it.
I'm trying to stay away from it.
They were celebrating.
I don't doubt
that
it.
And complaining because the news had interrupted the regular newscast with the announcement, and they were griping because nobody broke into the newscast when, wait for it, Jesse Helms died. Well, nobody, pardon my language, nobody gave a flying fuck if Jesse Helms died.
Oh, I know. Well, the right wing did, they're sick that way.
Yeah, it's just, and they're still at it. Apparently, Ted is, they think, I don't know whether it's true or not, but they think Teddy's going to be buried at Arlington, which would only be fair, only be right. And they say it's a travesty.
Of course it is.
I could say something, but I won't. But at least getting mad has stopped my crying. I just, the reason I called is I wanted to say that whether the people of the 50 states knew it or not, each one of those states had a third senator. His name was Teddy. Because he didn't care what state you were from. He worked for you anyway.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
And he, you know, he could have spent his, he was rich enough, he could have, and he was born to wealth, he could have spent his entire life stoned. God knows, we all know of celebutards who do exactly that. They spend their entire lives stoned. But he learned really, really early the meaning of the term noblesse oblige.
Well, it was ingrained in him by the family, was it not?
Yes. And so he got down and he worked. He worked himself half to death. Not for himself or his family, because let's face it, they already had everything they could ever want for the next 100 years. He worked for the people who didn't have anything. For those black people in Mississippi who didn't have crap because the laws were stacked against them. For those sharecroppers, the white sharecroppers in Alabama who didn't have crap. But because they were too busy hating the blacks, they didn't notice. And I could go on and on and on. I think the thing that I, the one speech of his that I will remember most, and you can find it up on YouTube, is the speech he made over in the Senate about the minimum wage when he had just had enough. And he blew a gasket. And the famous Kennedy temper just blew high, wide, and handsome. And he blew it at the Republican Party. And he let them hear a few home truths. And oh, it was wondrous.
Shoot me a link to that, would you? If you can.
I'll do something better. I'll put it up on the main website.
How well, no. I mean, that doesn't help me in the middle of the in the middle of the show. No
sure.
offense, but
sure, I'll do that.
Maybe run some audio.
Oh yeah, it's just wonderful. Yeah, he just went completely gaga.
Exactly. And he was good at that.
Anyway, that's, yeah. He was an orator that just, you know, when he was elected, a lot of people, I remember, a lot of people thought, he's just a poor version of his brothers. Well, wherever you are, Teddy, you weren't that. You exceeded your brothers by a whole long shot. Your brothers died before anything could be, they could do anything. You did it. You got in the trenches and you did it. Bless you.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you.
I'll go cry some more.
Take care. Not all tears are evil.
No, I know.
Be well.
Bye. Love to Agnes.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
It is, of course, a testament to Senator Kennedy that so many from so many places felt such a connection to him. Because his representation did cross state lines, party lines, philosophical lines, racial lines, and national boundaries. Got an email here from our buddy David in South Carolina. He said, just wanted to share something that may not seem very significant in the broad scope of things. Last year, after he got sick, I wrote Senator Kennedy a get-well email. A month or so later, I received a handwritten thank you signed by his wife, Vicky. It was totally unexpected and much appreciated. Simple courtesy is so rare. And David is, of course, correct. At some point, as much as I don't want to, we probably will reflect a little bit on the response of the right wing. I've got enough here to keep me off my feed for a week. But for now, let's just take a little break. And if you want to, fill up the phone lines again. Here is the audio of which Susan spoke. Or not. I spoke prematurely. Maybe I got it wrong. I don't know. That's what happens when you do radio on the fly. Nope, not there. The URL contained a malformed video ID. Oh, well. We'll probably get to it. William writes in and says, as senators and president, the Kennedy name has been there my entire life. I was in high school gym class when we were taken to inside sitting against the lockers. When we were told about JFK, we were sent home and spent the days watching black and white TV as the dark days of the funeral proceeded. This ran quickly into an unmemorable Thanksgiving. We watched Oswald shot on TV and the Warren Commission and heard all the speculation. These were some dark times. Not long after and before this darkness lifted and the reality finally sunk in, MLK and soon after RFK were gunned down. Then it was JFK Jr., and while there was Teddy almost in a state of endless loss, yet he somehow managed to stand tall and endure and fight the good fight against all odds or expectations. Now they are all gone, and the past rushes forward to bind with the present and leaves an emptiness that I fear can never be filled. These people, with their brave choice and determination, were one of a kind, and this country does not produce these sorts of leaders. Modern times and ease of ignorance have all but erased the desire they had, which was all focused on the people for the betterment of future, of the future. You'll pardon me, William, if I hang on to that phrase. The ease of ignorance. They say that ignorance is bliss. It's also easy. I've got the link back. Thank you, William. I've got the link back. Thank you, Gene, and thank you, Lottie. Let's see if we can get it going. Here we go. Ted Kennedy on Republicans and minimum wage.
How much time do I have?
24 minutes, Senator.
I ask the chair to let me know when there's 5 minutes left.
The chair will do so.
Mr. President, it is now 10 after 5 on the fifth day that the Senate has been considering raising the minimum wage from $5.15 to $7.25 over a two-year period. We have not, as we have heard in the course of this debate, raised it in the last 10 years. This is just going to restore the purchasing power of those at the lower rung of the economic ladder, what it was really 10 years ago. Won't even give them an increase. Won't even give them a benefit. Just restore the purchasing power. 5 days we've been debating. Rather simple concept that everyone in this institution knows and has voted on a number of times, whether it's over here in the Senate or in the House of Representatives. For 10 years, Republican leadership has refused to let us get a vote on increasing the minimum wage. Let's have no mistake about it, Mr. President. 10 years, the Republican leadership has basically refused to let us get it, even though a majority of the members in this body, a handful of those Republican members, have favored an increase in the minimum wage, but we have been unable to get to the sufficient to break the effective filibuster and deny us the opportunity to vote. These individuals that have been receiving the minimum wage, and their families, and their allies, and their supporters, and the workers of this country, the trade union movement, the AFL-CIO, the church groups, those that represent the great faith of this country, and others, particularly Democrats and some conscientious Republicans, have said this is wrong, and we will try and do something about it. And they have, over the period of time, raised the on initiatives in a number of states, in 6 different states, where this issue was on the ballot. They indicated that they wanted the increase in the minimum wage. States have raised the minimum wage. But we have still not had this institution, the United States Senate, go on record to say to working families in this country that they ought to get a raise. $240 billion in tax breaks for corporations, $36 billion in tax breaks for small businesses, increase in productivity, 42% over the last 10 years. But do you think there's any increase in the minimum wage? No. 5 days on the floor of the United States Senate. We've considered immigration issues, as we have now. We've considered Social Security issues. We have considered health issues. We are considering education issues. We're considering additional kinds of tax breaks for wealthy corporations. But do we hear from the other side a willingness, as this side is at this moment, at 12 after 5 today on Thursday? I speak for all of our Democrats and say, we're prepared to vote now. Now. 10 minutes, 15 minutes on this issue. But no, as we have been for the last 5 days, no, we've got other amendments, Senator. We've got other amendments. We've got other amendments to offer. We have now had amendments that have been worth over $200 billion. Amendments that have been offered. We've had amendments on education of $35 billion. We've had health savings amendments that will benefit average for income of $112,000, $8 billion. We've had those kinds of amendments. And we're looking at the Kyle Amendment at $3 billion. But we still cannot get a $2.15 over 2 years. Over 2 years. What is the price? We ask the other side. What is the price that you want from these working men and women? What cost? How much more do we have to give to the private sector and the business? How many billion
$8 more. Are you asking? Are you requiring? When does the greed stop? We ask the other side. That's the question. And that's the issue, Mr. President. Make no mistake about it. They have, on the Republican side, 70 more amendments. 74, 70 more amendments. We have none. We're prepared to vote now. 70 more amendments. Oh, yes, oh, we want increase in the minimum wage. We want this, we want that. But silence over there, or let's have some other kinds of amendments that have virtually nothing to do with this. Do you have such disdain for hardworking Americans that you want to pile all your amendments on this? Why don't you just hold your amendments till other pieces of legislation? By this volume of amendments on just the issue to try and raise the minimum wage, what is it about it that drives you Republicans crazy? What is it? Something. Something. They're going to require us to go in to have a cloture vote next week. I can see it already. Amendments have already been filed that are going to be related in case we do get cloture to delay this even further. What is the price that the workers have to pay to get an increase? What is it about working men and women that you find so offensive that you won't permit even a vote? Denying the Senate of the United States the opportunity to express ourselves. We don't want to hear any more from that side for the rest of this session about permitting and not permitting votes in here. When you're denying on the most simple concept, an increase in the minimum wage, we don't want to hear any more about that. This is filibuster by delay and amendments. I've been around here long enough to know it when I see it and smell it. And that's what it looks like. That's what it is. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. And said that until we get universal coverage, he wasn't going to take this. But the idea that all Americans ought to understand now is what we are standing for. And I commend the senator again from Montana and the senator from Iowa and the others, and my friend Senator Hatch, who we worked with years ago, and Senator Rockefeller on this program, is a rather simple and fundamental concept. And that is this, that every child in America ought to have a healthy start. We are about here in the United States Senate, we are about expressing priorities. And those of us on this side of the aisle, and a group on the other side, a small group on the other side, courageous group on the other side, have stated that same concept, that every child in America should have a healthy start, number one. And number two, that every parent in America should be relieved of the anxiety about worrying whether they have sufficient resources to be able to make sure that their child is going to receive decent quality of health care. Those are revolutionary thoughts, huh? Those are surprising concepts. Is that right? Evidently, they, our friends on the other side of the aisle get all worked up about that, those two concepts, that all children in this country should have a healthy start, and that mothers and fathers, but mothers and fathers should be relieved from the anxiety that their child has an earache, or their child has a sore throat, or their child has a headache. They have to wonder whether their child is $150 or $175 sick, because that's what it costs to take emergency room. So they wait overnight. They let the child get a little sicker. They have a sleepless night. They worry, they hope, and they pray that their child gets better. Well, we in this body say that America can do better. I listened to my friend, and he is my friend, from Mississippi, talking about the cost of this program, $60 billion over 5 years. That's what we're spending in 5 months in Iraq. 5 months in Iraq. What would the American people rather have? Coverage for their children or a continued conflict in Iraq where we're losing the blood of our young men and women? This is the issue. Let's not complicate it. Let's not make it difficult. Let's not make it unreasonable. And that is what this is about. Sure, which listen to the arguments. Oh, someone's going to have to pay for it. Yes, it's going to be those that are going to be smoking. What is the result of increasing the tobacco tax? What is the direct result? Tobacco, cigarettes, when used as advertised, increase deaths in America. Among who? Among children. Every day, 2,800 children become addicted. Every year, 500,000 people die because of the use of tobacco. So what happens when we raise the tax of 60%, 61 cents on the cigarettes? You know what happens? Children stop smoking. Oh, they do? Yes, they do. Who says so? Who says so? Just look at the history of what has happened when we have increased the tax on cigarettes. So, Mr. President, I commend those on the Finance Committee for finding a revenue measure that will make sure that will ensure all children are going to stop and end smoking, but that this will be a major disincentive for young people to smoke. On the other hand, it gives children a healthy start and relieves the anxiety for parents. And thirdly, it makes sure or it discourages the children from smoking. So, Mr. President, this is a measure that speaks for action, it speaks for justice, it speaks for fairness, it speaks for our values. But I, for one, who strongly believe in the concept of a comprehensive health care, and we'll have that debate at another place and at another time. But, Mr. President, when I know that my children were covered, they're grown now, as others have been here, but I know when they needed health care, I know that they were able to receive it. And I remember very clearly that when my child had lost his leg to cancer, we saw families in that chamber that were absolutely driven into poverty because they couldn't afford the same kind of health care that we had. And this is a statement and a comment that we here in the United States Senate find children to be a priority, find their parents to be a priority, find it to be in the interest of children to increase the tobacco tax. This legislation makes a great deal of sense, and I again commend the sponsors for it. Whatever time remains, I'll yield to my friend and colleague from Connecticut, and I ask consent that my full statement be included in the record.
Without objection.
about 18 minutes before the hour, and that interlude seemed appropriate. Juanita just wrote in and just briefly said, I wish you would play this Ted Kennedy Senate floor speech every day or thereabouts. I wish that we had people in the United States Senate who called themselves Democrats, Juanita, who would make speeches like that on the floor of the Senate every day or thereabouts, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Our friend Jude from Women's Standing in Seattle writes and says, hello, Bob and Horn listeners. Please pass on to Susan, when in the well of grief, all one can do is simply just be present to it. There are no answers, no words, just the profound human experience of it. The pain of loss and the tears that flow are critical to who we are as human beings. It presents us to ourselves, and we live in that sacred space. Susan sounds like she has great strength, and it takes this strength to grieve. There are so many with her at this moment. In the book The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, he writes, pain is but the breaking of our shell that leads to our understanding. Rest in peace, Senator Ted Kennedy. And Susan, we sit in the well of grief with you. You are not alone. Peace, Jude. How profoundly touching and true. From Georgia, we get this. Georgia the person, not Georgia the state. Georgia's been listening for a long, long time. And she says, I mirror Reverbo's thoughts, and we indeed have lost one of the greats of our liberal cause. Now people are wondering who will replace him. Well, he can't be replaced any more than his brothers could. I was raising two small children and standing at an ironing board when I heard the news that JFK had been gunned down in Dallas. I was stunned and deeply hurt. I remember how after a very brief moment of silence, the Republicans discredited him and trumpeted his indiscretions in an attempt to tarnish his shining political image. These are the same Republicans that now will tell you that he was a good president. Bobby picked up the gauntlet and ran with it and was gunned down by a guy that I found out lived two blocks from me. I didn't know him, but he certainly impacted my life. We seem to have forgotten about JFK Jr., the very handsome and very liberal young man that had political aspirations and would have been a star in the political world, but his life was cut short by a mysterious plane crash while flying to Martha's Vineyard. He was an experienced pilot and made the trip many times. I've often had the thought that he was nipped in the bud so he wouldn't be a problem later, basically a grassy knoll without the grass or the knoll. Now our Teddy is gone. I love that man because he loved humanity and he worked tirelessly for their good. For all the negatives that there might be, they all shined with the light of righteousness and the milk of human kindness when they didn't even have to give a damn. But that would have made them Republicans, huh? A note of appreciation to the parents who saw to it they were all grounded in reality and taught them what was really important in life, and who taught them that you don't lie down in the face of the enemy, you confront it and fight it. I mourn Teddy's passing and I cry for our loss. We have a few heroes left to carry on the fight, and I'm grateful to each one of them. The young Kennedys are coming up, and we never know what's in store, do we? There's always hope. Love to all. Hugs to Agnes. Keep fighting. Georgia. Thank you, Georgia. Thank you. And I am fighting a battle with myself, trying to keep myself from looking over at the vile, bilious, noxious, toxic, pestilent, pestiferous, excrescent right wing as they celebrate their glee at the passing of the last of that generation. It is a struggle that I'm trying really hard not to lose, but don't know if I'll win. There's about an hour and 13 minutes left in the program. It's up to you to keep me out of that swamp. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's all toll-free. But if you'd like to save us a nickel or a buck, you can dial direct, 304-658-3333, or like William and like Georgia. And like Maura and David and others, you can also write in Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Good evening.
Well, Ed.
How are you doing?
Tough night, but I'm just glad to hear from you.
Well, I was sitting here thinking, you know, I listened just a little bit of your eulogy or whatever you would call what you just did, your memoirs of Kennedy, and I would love to be 30 years, have the compassion and knowing how to get to where I want to go as he did. I would definitely run for office, and I don't think I'd run for any office in anybody else's category that I know. That's what I thought of him. I've got badges here when he was going to run for president and so forth. I've still got his literature and where we met in Charleston when I was with the United Auto Workers. And we run into him at the Capitol in D.C. and on the steps. And Bob, he was absolutely like you'd meet someone going through my field. That's the kind of guy he was. And, you know, when JFK was killed, I remember that very clearly, and how I felt like the world would probably come to an end because they killed him. That's how the Kennedys have affected me totally. I didn't particularly care for Bobby, but Ted and Jack Kennedy, I don't believe it's hard to tell where we would be at if Jack Kennedy had lived to go through what he wanted to go. This nation would not be in need of a health bill. It would not be in need of a lot of things that are even unforeseen to us, to the average person. I remember hearing one deal on him where he was a sailor. He had the PT-109. And he went up to the back of a boat here while he was president and pitched some beer up, which is illegal, to the sailors on the fantail of his ship, you know. And, of course, those guys took it because the president gave him to it. He's
sure.
Commander-in-chief. But technically that is illegal to have booze on the ship unless you're taking it for souvenirs or something. And that, they probably did, a couple of them. But the Kennedys there's no replacements for them because every one of them has got a little bit of different approach and twist to life and to the different problems that we have. And all I can tell you is they'll be deeply missed, that people don't even know that they're missing them because they haven't seen the full picture of what they stand for and just what they are. I still can't express my, how I really feel in my heart about them. You know, it's too much. I'm like you are. It really weighs heavy on you to see. And that was so fast. That seemed to be so fast that his sickness come up on him, and now he's gone. It's just so terrible. They say bastards live forever, and the good guys go early. And
yeah, how long did Strom Thurmond last?
Oh, God, that was I don't know.
101 years old?
I think he
proves your thesis, Ed.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. And so many of them are like that, Bob. They, well, even the one Newt Gingrich's age has been here too long. So, in my opinion, and I really have a hard time wishing different people gone, but George Bush will be missed. Newt Gingrich and Orrin Hatch, Mitch McConnell, all those people should be put in a damn sack and set on fire. That's how bad I detest that kind of breathing the same air that they do. And, you know, they taught us in the Navy when I went through, it's a lot of years ago, that those were the kind of people that you want to be ready to fight. And they're nowhere talking about in our country. They were talking about in other countries. And here now we got them living in our backyard. So there's miles and miles of difference between Kennedy's and the kind of people that I just mentioned. Plus, I could name about six more.
Well, there's not a Bush ever been born or will ever be born that can ever come close to doing the national service of a Kennedy.
No, there's not one of them. They're all of them together. You could put them in a sack and take their brains and a hummingbird fly upside down. So that's the way I feel about all of them.
As do I, Ed. And you see, what we're talking about here is a definitional difference. It's the difference between public service and self-service in the name of the public.
Yeah.
The Kennedys actually engage in public service. It is ingrained in them, or especially that generation, from the cradle. A Bush, on the other hand, has ingrained in them from the moment they are in the cradle the idea that there is a big public trough out there, and that as a Bush, it is their job to get their front feet and eventually their trotters in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what? You can't say too much about the difference between a public servant and a servant for himself. You just, the people we got in there, most of them now, are for what they can get out of it. And to prove my point, they think health care is good enough for them, complete health care, the best. But it ain't good enough for the people to put them in office. It ain't good enough for the people to pay the taxes to get them that. That is the most blatant example of what you're talking about. To me, I mean, that sticks out worse than any of them. And I think I told you before, we used to get a little book called Ammunition. It was in comic form. But it wasn't but usually 8 or 9 pages long. And the United Auto Workers put it out and sent them to the president and the chairman of the shop. And I got one. It had the secretary hanging on the doorway hollering at one of the senators, said, "Hurry up and get over to the Naval Methodist Hospital and get your free physical so you can come back and vote against this health bill." And boy, Bob, that's 35, 40 years ago. And I haven't forgotten. You know, I could live to be 240 years and I wouldn't forget that unless my mind went completely out on me. So I know what the score is. I know what kind of people, Rangel and guys like that, all of those guys, yeah, they get paid for it. But they do show some signs of being for the public. And there, but you, I don't know, what do you got? Probably 15 or 20 that are out of all of them. All of them, most of them is somewhere between the Blue Dog and Mitch McConnell. And the Blue Dog, I told you before, they're more like, they should call them Yellow Dog, so they come close to having contracts with each other or the Republican Party, whichever's handy, about like the coal miners have to sign against the union or never to have anything to do with the union. That's what they remind me of. They're nowhere land. So I'm very, and I am so discouraged with the Democratic Party right now. I don't know.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things that really stuck in my craw, Ed, is this, one of the things that came out, and I guess it was, well, this business of, well, and it was mentioned in another call, if only he'd been part of the debate, we might have had a health care bill by now. We might have had a compromise. Ted Kennedy didn't want to compromise on health care.
No.
Ted Kennedy knew what was needed for this country.
He has known for years. I just watched a documentary on it. You probably might have watched part of it. And it showed him when he still had black hair, preaching and throwing up his fist, and one day, a national health bill. Now, this was, I'm talking about, that had to be 35. Well, it was probably when he ran for president in 60. I can't remember when he ran.
He ran in 80.
In 80, is that when it was? I was thinking 68, but it probably was 80. But I've still got his literature and stuff like that with dates on it. And I'm going to pass it on to one of my grandbabies. But I just...
Well, what did you think today? When, and I don't know, did you see Byrd's statement?
No.
Well, Senator Byrd, of course, issued a heartfelt statement. I think they really were fond of each other, those two. And he called upon the Senate, he called upon the health care bill to be named in Ted Kennedy's honor. And I read that with, forgive me, Ed, but with a little bit of bitterness. Because I don't want a bill named after Ted Kennedy that doesn't do what
Ted Kennedy would have wrote it.
Right.
Well, I'm not sure where Byrd stands on that either. Maybe you might be right. It might have been heartfelt, but he was for health care before Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton ever thought about coming along. And I mean it. If I don't know how many times they'll run this documentary, but if you get a chance, watch it. It's in fact, it's still on. It's got on there now, 1932 to 2009.
What channel are you watching, Ed? What network?
39.
No, not the number on the box. What network?
Let me look. I gotta look. I don't like him much, but he's better than the other ones on there, because you were right about Lou Dobbs and
Oh, you must be watching MSNBC.
Yeah, I couldn't think of it. I was looking for my caller ID not my caller ID, but my button thing to change it and see the name under it, but that's what it is. And it's followed up by Countdown.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I watch now is Rachel Maddox and
Keith Olbermann. Yeah, I guess Rachel's been out sick this week or some such.
Probably maybe on vacation.
Nah, I think she's sick. That's what I read somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I thought Lou Dobbs, you know, I know we differ a little bit on illegal people coming into the country with all the people we got unemployed, but that be as it may, I thought, because I was with Lou Dobbs on that, I thought he was all right, but that's all he heard from him for...
No, he's a big old right-wing gas bag.
Oh, he is nothing but another rude, overbearing cutoff if you get too close to him, because they had a woman on there that was really working him over here about 10 days ago, and I turned it off because he was just overriding her and being as rude as he could to her. That's all they got going for him. You can tell them right away because of their manners. He was raised in a goose pond. So that's how I feel about Lou Dobbs now. I don't have a bit of use for him. And you warned me about him early on that he was a right winger, and he is.
Well,
I just thought I'd give you a call and give you comments. And I'm going to tell you now, I'm disappointed in the Democrats. I'm not disappointed in Obama because I really believe that he was on the verge of withdrawing that the main part of that health bill. I can't think of the name of it, where the public had a right to choose.
Yeah, the public option.
Yeah, public option. And I think he was right on the verge about 2 weeks ago of saying that that's not important. And I'll tell you what, that might have made a difference whether I voted for him again or not. He withdrew on that because that really gets the whole thing. The insurance is paying $1.4 million a day to fight. Have you seen the advertisements where the ambulance is trying to get through the hospital and everything in the world is interfering with them, you know, trying to get them stopped? That's what's going on. And all they can do, all the Republicans can do is say no or do them like they did the guy from Minnesota that run. They drug that out. I can't remember his name, where he beat the other senator by 235 votes, I think, or 25. The one from Minnesota, the senator.
Oh, you mean Franken and Coleman?
Franken, yeah. And I tell you, I'm not too good on remembering names anymore, Bob. But anyway, look how they drug that out.
Right.
They turn around and they drug out the Supreme Court nomination. I forget what they're working on now, dragging it out. Well, they're dragging out the health bill. That's,
sure.
That's three out of three right there.
And don't forget that they've done a lovely job in with a lot of connivance from so-called Democratic senators in killing the Employee Free Choice Act.
And here we go with Lieberman again. That scum-sucking little pig, they should put him on an old sow to feed him. That I despise that guy. And, you know, my brother-in-law, my son-in-law, my daughter lives in Connecticut, and they feel the same way I do, and they're going to work to get rid of him if he lives long enough to run again. But he is a true politician, though, to himself.
Oh, yeah, that old line from Shakespeare, to thine own self be true, that's the only thing Joe Lieberman's true to.
Yeah. I despise even Seymour Larry. And I know he can't help his false teeth bobbing it down, but between trying to talk around that and lie, I don't have a lot.
Ed, you hurt me.
Bob, I'm not making fun of people's false teeth. All mine ain't real.
No, but just the image of trying to talk over your false teeth and lie at the same time. I don't think I have ever heard Joe Lieberman described more accurately and more honestly.
Well, if I don't like you, son, don't take long to find out. And I don't like him, plus the other four I mentioned, and there's about another half a dozen with them. But the Republic, that Bonger, Bonner, whatever his name is.
Yeah, the pumpkin face.
He's the most despicable liar and skank that I've ever seen.
Well, that's why he's a Republican. They flock, you know, that like finds like.
Yeah. Birds of a feather flock together.
Yeah.
But when you told me they was nothing but a bunch of thugs, just watch it real slow materialize like Cheney and Karl Rove, and you'll find out that Karl Rove, he was probably so dirty they wouldn't have let him in the, what gang was that they got one who died in prison? I can't think of the game.
Well, just put it this way: when Karl Rove goes to his just reward, they will have to screw him into the dirt. That's how crooked he is.
Yeah, well, I want to go check and make sure it's real. But it's
the Gambino?
Gambinos, yeah. I couldn't think of that either, Bob. But they probably wouldn't let Dick Cheney in with them.
No, because they got a little bit of honor. They got honor about them.
They got a little bit of integrity. But anyway, Bob, I'll get off here. I'm sure you got other calls, and I'll listen just a little bit.
All right, I'll put you on hold so you can listen in, Ed. It's awful good to hear from you.
Well,
And I know I'm speaking for the rest of the Horn family. We haven't heard from you in a long time, and I've actually been, hey, where's Ed? How's Ed? What's Ed been doing?
Yeah, well, now they know. But I've spent 10 out of the last 20-some days in the hospital, so that's been one of my problems. And
that will put a kink in your social schedule.
That'll put a kink in your eating.
Well, Ed, I hope you're feeling better, and I'll put you back on hold, and you can listen as long as you want.
I'm getting around now, and at least I'm able to think about golf. I didn't care now. I thought I was ready to give my golf clubs away before.
Don't you do that? Yeah, you may yet get in some good autumn golf. Yeah, that's good golf, that autumn golf.
Yeah, I know it. If you can find the balls in the leaves,
there's that.
Yeah.
But then again, that's the story. Yeah, it doesn't matter if I play in driving snow or with an orange ball or. Spring, summer, or fall, you know, finding the golf ball is always a challenge for me.
You're going to have to hunt it, huh?
Yeah, I live in the woods.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I done played with you once. You didn't look like you lived in the woods to me.
Well, those were a couple of halfway decent days, Ed, trust me.
Yeah, it wasn't nothing on the ground either. Well, Bob, I'll talk to you later.
All right, you take care. Good to hear from you. All right,
yeah.
All right.
I always said hello.
I sure will. You stand by.
All righty.
That's our good friend Ed, one of my neighbors here in Fayette County. I love getting together and hanging out with Ed whenever possible. And we will keep things rolling right along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Well, hey, Fancy.
Hey. I love Ed. I love to hear Ed. Ed is just one of those natural wise people that I delight in. So here's the tip of the hat to Ed, and I beautiful, beautiful, beautiful piece of tape that you ran there with Ted Kennedy. That was absolutely beautiful. Please play it often. Also, speaking of last night, you said Peter was recovering.
Yes.
Have you heard from him? Is he getting better?
I have not heard from Peter directly. He is not feeling fully himself yet, but I've been told that he's on the mend.
Let him know that there's a concerned public out here that would like to know and keep us up. Now, you were getting to those people.
Yes. Don't you make me go in there. Don't you.
Okay. I'm going to tell a few stories and get you know how I dance around the point for a while.
Okay.
I was talking to my ex-husband. My ex-husband and I are good buds. And this was a couple of years ago, and I said, I'm going to be in the area. I said, I'm coming in for a high school reunion. And he laughed, and he says, well, what are you going to do at a high school reunion? And I said, well, you know, I was such a little shit in high school. And it's a two-night affair, so I figure I'll spend the first night just apologizing to everybody, and then the second night having fun. And he said, well, honey, everybody's a little shit in high school. And I thought, well, that is true, isn't it? That when I think of all those people that I grew up with it, I think the phrase in my mind is always the nasty pretensions. The na-na-na-na-nu-nu folks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Mine's bigger and better than yours. Our vacation was whatever. And I go back and I think about it. And I think in a lot of cases, oh, my God, that was all they had. You know, the little girl who said, well, my daddy sells Buicks. And as you grow up, you realize daddy didn't sell that many Buicks. And there were, you know, there was beans and cornbread on their table.
Well, you know, you are often good for a wonderful story, Fancy, so one good turn deserves another. What you described there reminds me of the story of the two sisters who get together. They're twin sisters.
Okay. I know the story, but it's worth the telling.
They're comparing notes because they both have new husbands. And sister number one says, well, I just love my new husband. Do you know for Christmas this year, he got me a brand new Mercedes? And her sister says, how nice. And she said, do you know for my birthday he got me a 3-carat diamond ring? And her sister looks at her and says, how nice. And she said, and you know, for our anniversary, he took me on vacation, and he took me to Hawaii, and we stayed in a resort. And her sister said, how nice. And then she said, well, what's your new husband done for you? She said, he sent me to finishing school. Really? What did you learn? She said, I learned that whenever I want to say you just go right to hell, I say, how nice.
Exactly. I love that story. I have a friend I used to refer to as the finishing school dropout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everyone makes it. But back to our folks who are so rude and so na-na-na. You know, these are adults who still have the playground na-na-na-na-new mentality working. And these are people who cannot think. Part of my fear here, it started with the men wearing guns in public. And, of course, yeah, I'm from Texas. People had guns. We didn't shoot each other. But when I see, and I tell the story about going to the junior high school concert and the guy's wearing a pistol on his hip, and my companion said, I hope he likes the Mozart. But you've got to realize that men who wear guns in public are terrified. These are truly, truly, truly frightened people. You know, you and I are not so frightened that we have to get armed to go to the grocery store or the junior high concert or the town hall meeting.
Although I must admit, I'm going to watch Ferg play football tomorrow, and I won't be on the air. And I'm a little nervous about that. Junior high, middle school athletics parents are somewhere on a par with little league parents in many ways. But no, I'm not going to pack any heat.
Yeah, well, we're talking major nuts here. I want to tell a story. You know, I grew up in Texas in a time where there was miles and miles of miles and miles, and absolutely no public transportation outside of the cities. So the way it worked out there is if your family needed you to drive, you could get a full driver's license at age 14, which I did. And the next day they said, fine, pick up the dry cleaning, take your grandmother to the dentist and your sister to her piano lesson. And I became the official family gopher.
The gopher chauffeur.
Oh, you betcha. But did an awful lot of driving. In my life. Now, one of the things that they would talk about when we were kids driving, and they said, if you come across a hurt animal, you're driving and you look in the road and there's a dog that's been hit and it's not dead. You know, and we're going to assume it can't walk if it's still in the road. And what people would tell you is they said, don't get out and try to help that animal. Because a hurt animal is a dangerous animal. And I to this day, I carry a quilt in the back of my car. I think you talk to any of us that grew up in rural counties that where that was the possibility. We always had a quilt in the back of the car to find because if you came upon an injured animal, you had to cover its head and make it less dangerous. Because whether it cared or not, it was going to hurt. And that's what I think of these armed, frightened men. These people do frighten me. I mean, they're doing it to intimidate.
Certainly.
They're saying, hey, you can't fool with me because I'm armed and you know, as I yell at my cat from time to time, I've got a broom and I'm not afraid to use it. But these people are dangerous because they're so frightened, just like wounded animals. Now I'm going to get to the hard part of the talk. You ready?
Okay. Strapped in.
It's up to us. It's up to the people like us to have compassion. And it's easy to have compassion for sweet, wonderful people who do sweet, wonderful things. It is very hard to have compassion for these misguided, selfish, stupid, etc., etc. But to feel the way we do about them is not, it doesn't hurt them in the slightest, and two, it's bad for us. And here's where the struggle comes, is to find and feel compassion for those folks. Now, I'm going to tell two real...
No, wait, do you realize that you have just...
Defused.
No, you have just touched on something that has been perplexing humankind for at least... and this goes well beyond Jesus, because he did inquiry into that same kind of stuff. But if you go back and read Plato's Symposium, this has been going on for this is an inquiry that's been going on for 2,300 years. And that, because Socrates, in the Symposium, which is a raucous little romp in the first place, I'm sure you've read it. I mean, you got Socrates, you did, All the playwrights are there, and these are real people, and they're horribly hungover from the previous night's bash.
Well, and they were also state supported, which is kind of interesting.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And you got Alcibiades hitting on Socrates, and Socrates wanting no part of it. And so it falls to him to declare what the topic for the evening's discussion will be. Yeah, it sounds like ancient Greece was a heck of a fun place, where you just sit around getting loaded and pondering deep and deep subjects.
With vomitoria.
No, that's the Romans.
Oh, that was right. You're right.
Yeah. Because the Greeks were quite civilized, and insisted. Actually, the Athenians, they would be horrified to be called Greeks. The Athenians were quite civilized and insisted on, and in fact, it was one of the president's duties, the president of the symposium, which Socrates was that evening, was to declare how much water would be added to the wine. They deliberately watered their liquor. But anyway... In the course of that conversation, Socrates says we will inquire into the nature of love, having just been groped by Alcibiades. And you doing what Socrates did so well, he inquires, you know, which is easier? What is a virtue, if I recall correctly? Is it a virtue when you love someone who loves you back? Well, of course.
It's easy to love the lovable.
Right. And is it then not a higher virtue to love someone who does not love you? And so you come around, and this is part of the reason, the creepy old bastards like St. Augustine defaulted Socrates into heaven, even though he pre-existed Yeshua. And there was a Latin term, homo Christiani naturalis, or naturaliter, a naturally Christian man. And they grandfathered Socrates in, because Socrates, long before Yeshua was even a glimmer in God's eye, Socrates said, if we would love as love is, we must love our enemies. And you have just you've just done all of that, and it just took me 5 minutes. You've just done all of that in a couple of sentences. So, a little golf clap.
And yes, these people deserve our contempt. They're stupid. They're et cetera, et cetera. Now, go forth and practice compassion. Oh, my. How difficult is that?
Yeah, no kidding.
How difficult is that? Hang with that. I got two real short little vignettes for you. When I was, little Jewish kid in Terrell, Texas, which meant I was the Jewish kid in Terrell, Texas. And when you hit 14 and 15, you not only have Sunday school, hooray, you have Saturday school too. And so my daddy would put me on the train early on Saturday mornings, and I'd go into Dallas. And I always remember this in kind of an Art Nouveau, Art Noir, you know, that black and white with a hard shadow film style.
Sure.
Okay, that's how these memories are for me. And nobody rides a train on Saturday morning except me. And I get off the train there at Union Station in Dallas, and I'd walk through a little park area, and I'd go to the corner, and I'd wait on that corner for my bus. And my bus would take me out. Sometimes I'd go to the city library, but I spent an awful lot of time on that corner in 2 years. Now, put that story aside.
Okay.
A number of years later, I'm a senior in college in drama. I'm in Shakespeare class. It's a Friday afternoon. There's a disturbance outside the door. We're hearing something. The bell rings. I leave class. There's a young guy in the hallway, one of our students, in a very high-pitched, laughing voice. Almost people don't know what to do at this point. And he's running through the hall saying, somebody shot the president. Somebody shot the president. Somebody shot the president in Dallas. And I'm in a group of people who don't know. You know, you don't run it through your mind and say, what do I do at this point? You have no idea how you feel. Except, I guess, just a kind of a numb confusion for everybody around me. And we went down to the student, in the basement of the building, there was a student lounge, and somebody had a radio. And we sat around, and in my mind, it's Cronkite's voice. I don't know how I heard that on the radio, but it's, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States is dead. And I remember walking around and seeing adults crying, which to me was very awesome. I remember, I have a lot of mixed memories about that. But now, back to my first story. The place that I waited for the bus on Saturday mornings was called Dealey Plaza.
Oh, my.
It's a street from the book depository. I spent an awful lot of time on that corner. It was, you know, had it happened in my front yard, it could hardly be more familiar to me. And to this day, I can't, I have literally never been to the memorial because I start crying when we get close to it. And I say, you guys go ahead, I'm going to sit in the car. Because that's one of the realities. This is the tragedy of this family is of classic proportions. You know, this could be written by Aeschylus or Euripides or.
And in being as we and so many others in the Horn audience are, classically taught and classically trained, how can you think of the Kennedy family without thinking of the Cornelian family in ancient Rome, the brothers Gracchi?
This thing is of classic epic proportion. It's awesome. Now I'm going to thank Susan for getting that file to you, because that was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I'm going to say that we're all sharing sadness, and as I've been told, when you're in sadness, it's okay to feel what you feel. Now, and also that you're going to feel this, and then minutes later you're going to feel that. You're going to be in utter despair, and then a few minutes later telling jokes about sisters and finishing school. And was it last night you talked about you got into Oedipus?
There was a brief mention of Oedipus and how everything happens off stage.
For you. You ready?
Okay.
Sex, Oedipus Rex. Thebes shall have a new master. He answered the Sphinx, as everyone thinks, and married his mother, Jocasta. Don't try the veal.
She'll be here all week. Don't forget to tip your waiter.
loved everybody. It's a sad time. One other thought of and it's cold comfort, but it's comfort. And I remember being at a funeral of a person who was in their 80s, and the clergy that was speaking, he said, you know, we say, oh, that someone dies young, it's such a tragedy, but there's a tremendous evidence in the death of an elder. That now, I went to grief group after my long-term semi-significant other went on, and one of the things I found in grieving is that there is a different grieving process between people who lost their loved people unexpectedly. We had folks in our group that had lost folks in car crashes, and my guy went unexpectedly. And there were other people who lost their loved ones in long illnesses. And one of the gifts, one of the great, gracious gifts of a planned illness is that one has a chance to say goodbye and prepare. And that's cold comfort at this moment. But we think that, you know, in a way it's almost, here's a Kennedy who actually ended in an awful but natural way. As I say it, I'm realizing that's very cold.
No, it. I understand what you're saying, Fancy, and yes, it is. This is of the brothers. This is of all the brothers. There were four, you know.
Yeah.
This is the only one who lived.
We'll put this in air quotes. A natural death.
A natural. Yes, came to a natural end. Who got to do with his life much of what he wanted to do with his life. I don't know, you know, I don't know how successful he would have been as a president. He had the times arrayed against him, Fancy. Because, you know, he ran in 1976 and was bested by Jimmy Carter because Jimmy Carter was, and you know, this is such an odd little fascination that our country has. Jimmy Carter was a former governor of Georgia and was on the outside. He was perceived as an outsider when the last thing this nation wanted was another Washington politician a la Dick Nixon and Gerald Ford.
Yeah.
We wanted to be done with all of it. So that put paid to Ted Kennedy's hopes in 76. And in 1980... he bucked convention and ran against Carter, with Carter being the incumbent. And he earned some significant opprobrium for that, which may well be a mark, a negative to a sterling public service career. But all you can do is go Yogi Berra and say that it is what it is. I don't know how badly he wanted to be president. I don't know if he ran for president. You know, sometimes it's like what Robert Frost said. It's hard to avoid being king when it's in you and it's in the situation.
Yeah, I think for many folks, you know, you're really not offered a whole lot of choices. You know, you're suddenly in the situation and you know, here's your choices. And you're going to take the high road, you're going to not. I think for our family, it have been, you know, exemplary as far as I can see for American values. The Kennedys have given way, way more than so many.
They have given, yes, that family has given the full measure of devotion. There we are back with Lincoln again.
You know, and there are
going to
be the...
Oh, no. See, it goes far beyond that, Fancy.
That's what makes them happy.
Oh, it's nasty. It is, well, okay, I'm, all right. I'm going to do this one, because this one more than anything else deserves to be called out. Not Flimball, not Beck. No, this is an executive at Premier Radio Networks. Now, Premier Radio Networks is the radio network that syndicates Rush Limbaugh, Randy Rhodes, several others. Eric Stanger is Director of Affiliate Marketing for Premier Radio Networks. He is Director of Talk Programming for ABC Radio Citadel Broadcasting. And he is Director of Affiliate Relations for The Sean Hannity Show. On Facebook, Eric Stanger wrote the following fancy. The irony is that the media is already positioning Ted as a champion for the little man against wealth and privilege. This piece of garbage was the poster child for wealth and privilege. Hopefully, this event will mark the end of this repugnant family and all the endless crap, entitlement, personal indulgences, and collateral damage Kopechne, Bissett, Bowman, Moxley, etc.
Holy shit.
I would really like for this man to be in the unemployment line tomorrow.
I don't listen to Limbaugh, but someone was saying that he was pretty much of a gentleman on the matter today.
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. No, he said, my friends, Ted Kennedy did not have to read a death manual. I got the audio here. I'm not going to play it.
Don't.
But I thought, you know, Flush Flimball, you sick, draft-dodging, drug-addled, miserable piece of human excrescence. I thought, no, Ted Kennedy didn't have to read a death manual. Ted Kennedy had it read to him in November 1963 and June 1968. I cannot think of an end for the likes of Rush Limbaugh that would be, you know, we're talking about the ancient Greeks, and they had a sense for how things ought to end, fancy. And I cannot think of a brutal enough, suffering-filled enough end. Because my mind is just not that evil and twisted. But I can't think of an end that would be miserable and agony-ridden enough for Flush Flimball to suit me.
You know, I often hit this point in life where I'm dealing with somebody. I have certain governors, certain things on my life which do not permit me to lie, and a few other things. And I deal with people who don't have those restraints. And I get pretty distressed about it. And I come down, and one of my little mantras when I'm just, you know, and my face is red, and I'm starting to really get bought into the whole thing. And one of my little mantras is, this person, he or she, well, what happens is I get to be me, and they have to be them. And you've got to, at some level, realize that these folks aren't really, really happy. Now, they may have moments where they, you know, walk out the front door and there's a flower and they go, oh, my God, that is so gorgeous. Or the sunset, or the bounty of, you know, or you know, they get a chocolate eclair and go into whatever, but you got a feeling that just moment to moment enjoying your life.
Well, you know, my personal bete noir here in Appalachia, Don Blankenship, I can well imagine that greasy bastard looks at a sunset and thinks, the mountain in front of the sunset? Sucker's going down.
I'm big man. I can take that. Oh, man. Yeah, I got a feeling that the folks who have... And good Lord, I've had my share of contemptuous speech in the past. where I've, I'm so superior to everybody else, and I'm so much better. Yeah, I'm not. Don't be silly. I'm
right.
Not. You know, I've got to, when I talk about spending a night just walking around among folks and apologizing for being a little shit, I was. I also find that time is a great equalizer. That I have a number of memories of relatives who were so snooty. Oh, my dear, she ate her salad with the...
wrong fork.
With the wrong fork. Oh, my God.
Did you see her picking out the, did you see her picking them olives out of the martini with a shrimp fork? I can't believe it.
Okay, you've had some time with part of my family there. And I also remember as a kid, one of the elderly aunts who had gone into a nursing home, and we turned up with chicken in a bucket. And she was going, yum, 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 this is really good. And all that pretension was gone. Because she was like a little kid. Somebody brought her chicken in a bucket. And I realized that pretension is, it's a real nice fun game. When you're healthy and you have a certain amount of wealth and your internal piano is well tuned. But then there comes a time where just picking up on the sunset or a flower or a bucket of chicken can be a lovely thing. And you have to be aware that there are folks that just are incapable of that kind of happiness. Much less the happiness of having family around you.
And much to be pitied they are. You know, we have made the inquiry over the last 2.5 hours, Fancy, and I'm going to get to another call here in just a minute, but I wanted to share this with you. We have made the inquiry of who is there in the Congress who could stand even remotely a chance of carrying the torch for America's working class, America's poor, America's forgotten. And I ran through several names in the Senate, but I blew right by the obvious. And I'm looking at some words here, and I want to share them with you and with the Horn family. Because this individual grew up as far away from the upbringing that Ted Kennedy had as any individual can. Part of a large Roman Catholic family, he too has seen his family die off around him under different circumstances. But where the Kennedys had a compound at Hyannisport, this man knew what it was to live in a car. The note says, "Dear friends, I first met Senator Kennedy on May 4, 1971, when he visited me at St. Alexis Hospital in Cleveland. I was then a Cleveland City Councilman recovering from an injury, and somehow he discovered I was in the hospital and paid a surprise visit to my room. He was visiting hospitals as part of his national effort to raise awareness of the need for reform of our healthcare system. I was elated to meet him. The visit began a friendship which has spanned 4 decades, during which time I had the privilege of serving with Senator Kennedy in the United States Congress. His compassion and caring was always personal and always real. When my brother Perry died unexpectedly in December of 2007, Ted Kennedy was one of the first to call with condolences, sharing his sympathetic understanding of what it means to lose a sibling. He had a powerful sensitivity to human emotion, and his life writ large the range of human experience, great triumphs and sudden reversals. His tenacity often came against the heavy burden of deep personal tragedy, which enlarged the quality of his spirit and made his frequent expressions of humor poignant and profound. Yes, he made himself into one of the greatest senators, with his advocacy for human rights, for health care, education, and worker protections. But Ted Kennedy was more than a great senator. He was a great friend. Sincerely, Dennis.
Dennis. We've got some people in there, and we've got some people who are coming in, and I think there's one other thing that to keep in mind, because, okay, I'm from Texas, and I remember when Lyndon Johnson was vice president, and we had some pretty terrible jokes about why we wanted that president to stay in office, stay alive, and he didn't. And up to that point, Lyndon Johnson was a snotty little represent-the-homeboys politician, but he was really good at it. You know, he's kind of, he's a bastard, but he's our bastard. And he was very, very good at it, and the day he became president of the people.
Yes.
Thus surprising us all tremendously. It was, so what is it, you know, born to greatness, thrust into greatness, accidentally fall through the crack and you're great?
Yeah.
I think we can look forward to folks. Some people are going to practice their better selves.
I hope you're right. Fancy, it's awfully good talking to you this evening. Thank you for your contribution to this ongoing conversation.
Bye-bye now.
Take care. And before we roll onward, an email from Jude. She had inquired earlier who played or who was responsible for that song, Harvest for the World. And I told her it was sent along by Sandra and that it's by the Isley Brothers. She said, Jude said, what a perfect alignment and reflection of our beloved Senator Kennedy. The timing of this specific piece of music after the audio of him giving the negative and self-seeking Senate members hell was perfection. Hearing Senator Kennedy's passion again was so articulately manifested, it filled me with strength. And today we all need strength to continue, and continue we will together. It has filled me and taken hold inside this mortal vessel of mine, and it honored Senator Kennedy's work and life. Please thank Sandra. Well, you just did, Jude, for all of us. Amazing, she says, how we assist each other in times such as this, even when we have never met. This is how we are defined. Sandra provided a beautiful extension for this day, easing the sharp stab of pain, bringing forth the healing melodic tones of music. Thank you for your words, Jude. And I am going to go back to the phones, but one more song. One more song. Something John Fox passed along. An awesome rock dirge, as he notes. He says, this is the song I always play on the passing of a friend, hero, anyone special. John says, I may be a non-believer, but if there was a heaven, Teddy would have well made up for his failings to gain entry with honors. The band is Temple of the Dog. The song is Say Hello to Heaven, and we'll be back in a moment. And with that, we've got time to work one more phone call in, and let's do so. Oh, or not. Well, so we're pretty close to the end of the program. And let me just take a moment to thank you all for sharing your thoughts on this sad day. I genuinely appreciate it. I think our emailers were right. Georgia and Jude. We don't know where the next champion will come from. And I am sure I am overly jaded when I begin to think that that can't happen. We know the real heroism that is put forward every day by the likes of Dennis Kucinich. Darn shame the rules aren't just a little bit more flexible so that Dennis might be able to be in the Senate. You know, George Voinovich is retiring from the Senate from Ohio. But a number of people that I've talked to, and I've said, you know, sure wish Dennis would run for that. But you don't want him out of the House of Representatives. You don't want him out of that seat. And the people I've talked to said, oh, I wouldn't stand a chance on a statewide election because, you know, it's his district electorate that keeps him in office. What a sad commentary on Ohio politics, if that is indeed true. But we need heroes in the House, and we need them in the Senate. And we will wait to see. We will wait to see who steps up. Our pal Diane, the artist who created the prints on sale at headonradionetwork.com, of which there are still some, and which are a bargain, and which it would be nice if you would purchase, because they are, in fact, collector's items. Diane says, the show is very sad today, but that's okay. I woke up this morning to read the news about Ted and felt in a way I had lost something more than I could ever appreciate. Thank you for sharing the audio. I'm sad in the way that I didn't grow up with the Kennedys. I'm sure many would argue it's worse for having grown up alongside them and then losing them in the worst way. The passion is shared, though. It moves me to hear Susan. Ted Kennedy will never stop being great. I hope what he has done inspires others, because just listening to him inspires me. Indeed. Indeed. Thank you, Diane. So I think that's about as far as the show can go this evening. I don't know what Malloy has in store, but I'm sure it will be touching. And thank you personally for saving me from having to go off into the swamp and deal with the volumes of right-wing hatred that is out there in regard to this moment. They have no decency. They have no souls. They are bereft of the most common elements of humanity, these monstrous right-wingers who are reveling in the death of Senator Kennedy. And I'm glad I didn't share any more of it with you than I did, because grief is honorable, and it does not deserve to be sullied. Program note, I will not be on the air tomorrow evening. I will be watching Ferg play football. It's that time again. He's playing both ways, offense and defense. I'll shoot some pictures. If there are any dandies, I'll send them along and share them. And I'm sure there will be. If for some reason that should not pan out, I will be behind the microphone tomorrow night, but do not expect me to be. Which means that you and I will next meet on the front porch on Friday. And we will get back to business. Again, many thanks this evening to you all. Thanks, as ever, to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, White Rose Society, since 2002, literally saving liberal radio and doing it via the Internet. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Well, good evening, everyone. I thought we would start the program this evening without the hullabaloo, without the carrying on, without the stuff that is usually attendant upon the beginning of the program. Because, frankly, it just doesn't seem appropriate on a day like this. welcome to the program. Welcome to Wednesday. Ordinarily, there would be all the usual hullabaloo of prayer meeting Wednesday. I'm Bob. But given Senator Kennedy's death today, like I said, it seemed improper to start with a bunch of shenanigans. So we're not gonna. There are not many occasions where I find myself speechless. And there is so much to be said about Senator Kennedy that trying to say it becomes nigh impossible. I can only say that I am, on the one hand, sad at his passing, and on the other, that I revel in his life, celebrate who he was, and am glad that to the extent that he was having pain, that he has been relieved of it. You know me well enough to know that I will not talk about any pearly gates or streets paved with gold or any of that nonsense from a barely literate people 3,000 years ago. But something in me wants to think that on the order of the energies of the universe, that some particle of what was him has been reunited with some particle of what was Jack and what was Bobby and what were his sisters, his other brother. So pardon the pauses that you can drive a truck through. What occurs to me is that this program should, as it always is, but even more so this evening, should be a time for you. Your reminiscences, your thoughts, your feelings, just a bit of an honorable retrospective. Because there is the Kennedy mythos. But that mythos only took root because there was something in that family that called out to the best of all of us and spoke to a dream of a better America and a better world. When I saw the news this morning that Senator Kennedy had passed on, died, left, transitioned, I don't like any of those phrases. But when I saw the news today, it occurred to me that, yes, a life as we know it had ended, and a generation had come to a close in that family. But there is something that is gone in our national character as well. And this is with no disrespect for the ongoing next generations of that family. But theirs was a generation of that family represented a hope for America taking its next step in the ongoing experiment of what we loosely call freedom. And I don't know where in the American overall family, I don't know where the likes of them are in the here and now. I simply don't. I know, if you can't tell, I was this close to just, I don't know, running some funerary music or something and knocking it off for the evening just as a matter of my own personal homage to Senator Kennedy and his family. I was too busy being a baby, literally, to be cognizant of the presidency of John Kennedy. I was a child not yet in school when Bobby was killed. And the Kennedy with whom I was most familiar was Ted, because he was an ever-present fixture within the governmental structure and the Senate from my earliest awareness forward. And whenever I would hear him speak, growing up, he was saying the things that it seemed only logical someone dedicated to principles of equality and real freedom and real decency in this country would say. And they were things that were not said by many others. And more's the pity. There has always been a